Up ahead, former President Trump in court for his so-called hush money trial. Hear him speak as he arrives at the courthouse.
Nations calling for restraint following Iran's aerial attack on Israel this past weekend. We had the latest response from President Biden.
European stocks rise amid the conflicts in the Middle East. The defense industry is among top gainers. What the numbers are indicating.
It's been almost 3 weeks since the tragic Baltimore Bridge disaster, which killed 6 people. Now the FBI is getting involved. More on the investigation.
In golf, number one ranked Scottie Scheffler wins the Masters in dominant fashion, while a rusty Tiger Woods struggles. Dave Martin will join us to explain.
Excitement is building as athletes get ready for today's 128th running of the Boston Marathon. What we know about the event.
This is NTD News Today, live from our NTD Global Headquarters. Here are Stephania Cox and Chris Beers.
Former President Trump's hush money trial is kicking off today with jury selection.
Trump is currently in New York courtroom. He made a brief speech as he arrived.
This is an assault on America. Nothing like this has ever happened before. There's never been anything like it. Every legal scholar said this case is nonsense. It should never have been brought. It doesn't deserve anything like this. There is no case, and they've said it. People that don't necessarily follow or like Donald Trump said this is an outrage that this case was brought. This is political persecution.
Scores of people are expected to be called into the courtroom to begin the process of finding 12 jurors plus 6 alternates. There could be some legal arguments and housekeeping before jury selection begins.
This is the first criminal trial of any former U.S. president and the first of Trump's 4 indictments to go to trial.
Trump is accused of falsifying internal Trump Organization records. It came as part of an alleged scheme to pay off adult film actress Stormy Daniels during the 2016 presidential campaign.
Joining us now is our legal correspondent Arlene Richards, who was outside the courthouse just this morning. Arlene, the courtroom filled up fast this morning. What was it like? What was the atmosphere like outside?
When I arrived, there were about 2 or 3 blocks of reporters, cameras actually, cameras set up in front of the courthouse. Some reporters were already starting to report. And then as I turned the corner, I had to face a long line of more reporters, which is the line I had to get in to try and get into the courthouse today. Two lines of reporters, including myself. And then there were a few protesters, a handful that were against Trump. There was a lady with a large sign that pretty much said, convict Trump already, and then another man. And there were a lot of reporters surrounding those two and interviewing them. And then about an hour later, I noticed that a big group of Trump supporters arrived with their flags. And there was a little bit of a tussle between them and the anti-Trump protesters. And then they were moved to another area, the Trump supporters, and that just grew. That got larger and larger as the hour went on. So I was surprised to see that there were more Trump supporters than anti-Trump, because his attorneys have been saying he can't get a fair trial today, because most of the Manhattan residents that they surveyed said they already think Trump is guilty. So I was really surprised to see that there weren't more people there who were anti-Trumpers. But otherwise, it was very calm outside, except for there being so many reporters and cameras. It was pretty calm.
And so what can we expect to happen inside the courtroom today?
Well, a lot's going to go on today. It is the first day of jury selection. So there won't be any witnesses being called, and there won't be any opening statements. But they will, as you said earlier, handle some loose ends. So one of those things is this motion to have Judge Mershon recuse himself. Now, this is the second motion the defense has filed, asking him to step down as the trial judge, because they say that his daughter actually helped Biden with his campaign in 2020. But the judge previously said that she's not involved in the trial, so there's no conflict of interest. And I expect he will rule the same today. And the other thing is, on Friday, they filed a letter at the last minute talking about how Trump can't get a fair trial because of this jury questionnaire. Now, there's a 42-question questionnaire that the jurors are each going to have to answer. They'll have to stand up and give their answers out loud, and then the attorneys can ask them follow-up questions. And this is how they're going to try and weed out the jurors. And so what the Trump team has said is that they did not ask the jurors whether or not they liked Trump. And they feel like if they could answer that question, then it would be easier for the Trump team to weed out people and get rid of jurors who don't like him. So they say that's a disadvantage for them. And the other thing is the jurors have to tell them which political party they are affiliated with, which means that the prosecution will know which party they're affiliated with that's Trump's party, right? So that's an advantage for the prosecution, they're saying. They will be able to strike those jurors who are possibly in the Republican Party. So I think these are a couple of things that the judge will try to address before the jurors even come into the courtroom, but we'll have to see if he will, you know, how he will rule on those things.
And what will the attorneys be looking for when they select jurors, Arlene?
Well, as we said, most people in Manhattan have an opinion about Trump. One way or the other, they have this opinion. And as I said earlier, his team has said he can't get a fair trial here because most people already think he's guilty. So they're going to use that as a way to try and strike as many jurors as they possibly can. But the other part of this is that they're going to be looking for jurors who are sympathetic to him, people who maybe can identify what he's going through. And the New York Times said in an article that those people would be younger black men and men who are blue collar, who are policemen, firemen, construction workers, those kind of people, according to a survey that they conducted. Those are the kind of people that Trump should be looking for. And the other thing is what legal experts have said is that they need jurors who have a strong moral compass. And what I mean by that is people who will take this case seriously, who will set aside all of their biases and really look at the case the way the judge instructs them to, which is to apply the law to the facts and make a determination whether or not the prosecution really has proven their case beyond a reasonable doubt, which is what they're required to do, and not just make an emotional decision. And the prosecution, on the other hand, they have to worry about their star witness, Michael Cohen, who is a convicted liar. And this is something that the defense team is going to push really hard, that this guy cannot be believed for anything that he says. And they're going to be looking for jurors who can set that aside and just listen to his testimony and take it as it is. So those are what the two sides will likely be looking for, and we'll have to see as the week goes on.
All right. Thank you for that update, Arlene.
Thank you.
Trump supporters and protesters are both gathering outside the courthouse to support their side. Take a listen.
You can see my signature.
Well, it's not going to be fair. And like I said, if the man steps on a roach, they're going to try to convict him for murder. And this is not the America I grew up in. It's frightening, and it's horrible, and people are not speaking out.
He's got a gag order by this corrupt Judge Mershon, whose daughter is a Democrat political operative, who's working with Democrats like Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. They literally have the Biden-Harris campaign as a client, working with Adam Schiff to raise millions of dollars for Democrats that are actively fundraising and writing emails. Oh, you don't want to hear this, right? Of course, you want to talk about the bias, and then the media goes away because nobody wants to talk about how Donald Trump did nothing wrong. Nobody wants to talk about this corrupt Judge Mershon and his corrupt daughter.
This is about what happened in 2016 when Trump tried to squelch information that he viewed as prejudicial to him. He broke the law in doing that. We believe that Alvin Bragg has a good case and that there will be a fair jury of New Yorkers there to judge the information and the law and make a decision.
Tensions are high in the Middle East after Iran launched a direct aerial attack on Israel over the weekend.
That's right. The White House says President Biden wants to see tensions de-escalate and doesn't want a wider war in the region.
And just because Iran conducted this unprecedented attack, which we and our Israeli partners and other partners thwarted, doesn't mean that we should just accept a constant rising escalation in the region. The president's not going to accept that. He wants to see things de-escalate. And everything we're going to do from this point forward is going to be designed to continue to try to reach that outcome.
Strength and wisdom need to be the same sides, the different sides of the same coin. I've been in close communication with counterparts in the region, and we will continue to do so in the hours and days ahead. We don't seek escalation, but we'll continue to support the defense of Israel and to protect our personnel in the region.
Israel is weighing its response following the attack from Iran. The country's war cabinet is meeting now after an earlier meeting last night.
Israeli officials said the war cabinet favors retaliation, but was divided over the timing and scale of any such response. Biden has told Netanyahu the U.S. will not participate in any Israeli counteroffensive against Iran.
The U.S., the U.K., France, Germany, Russia, China, as well as the European Union and the United Nations all called for restraint.
The U.S. military said it intercepted 80 drones and 6 missiles from Iran and Yemen during the attack on Israel. In a video on social media, Biden thanked U.S. military personnel who helped defend Israel.
Hey, you guys are the best in the whole damn world, man. The whole world. No, that's not hyperbole, man. Both these squadrons. You're incredible. Absolutely incredible. You made an enormous difference, potentially saving a lot of lives. And thanks to extraordinary skill, the United States helped Israel take down nearly all those incoming missiles. You're remarkable.
Later today, Biden will be hosting Iraq's prime minister to discuss regional stability. Their discussion will focus on the economy and the U.S. military presence in Iraq.
Portions of Iran's drone and missile attack on Israel were launched from Iraq, and the U.S. knocked down at least one Iranian ballistic missile from its base in Iraq.
Meanwhile, Iran says it didn't make prearranged agreements with any country prior to the attack.
Iran's foreign ministry says Tehran notified neighboring countries days in advance, but didn't make any deals.
And as tensions escalate between Israel and Iran, there are also updates to the war in Gaza. Israel is pressing ahead with its operations in the territory. Israel overnight launched more airstrikes on Gaza. Israel's military said even while under attack from Iran, they have not lost sight, not for a moment, of their critical mission in Gaza.
As fighting continues, displaced Palestinians are heading toward northern Gaza in an attempt to return to their homes. Large crowds of people can be seen walking along the coast.
The Israeli military today renewed warnings for Palestinians not to return to northern Gaza. The military said the area is still in active battle zone.
A military spokesman said that Palestinians should stay in southern Gaza where they have been told to shelter.
Still to come, if you haven't filed your taxes yet, we have some tips to help last-minute tax filers meet that deadline. O.J. Simpson's estate executor says the late football star's body will be cremated and his brain won't be donated to study sports head trauma. More in just a moment here on NTD News Today. Major media organizations are urging President Biden and former President Trump to hold debates before November's election. About a dozen organizations posted an open letter yesterday.
The letter says general election debates have played a vital role in every presidential election of the past 50 years, going back to 1976. The letter also says that tens of millions have tuned in to watch the competition for the votes of American citizens.
This year, it's uncertain whether the two candidates will face off on a stage ahead of the election.
Biden has not publicly committed to debating Trump, although he hasn't ruled it out. Trump has said he would debate Biden anytime, anywhere.
The Associated Press, CBS News, CNN, Fox, ABC, NBC, PBS, NPR, and C-SPAN are among the media outlets that released the statement.
A new poll shows Trump and Biden remain locked in a tight race for the presidency. The poll by the New York Times and Siena College had 46% of voters say they support Trump. 45% said they are backing Biden. That's a tighter race than the poll's last survey in February when Trump led Biden by 5 points.
The new poll shows 64% of voters feel the country is heading in the wrong direction. Close to 80% felt economic conditions were either fair or poor. Biden's approval rating is 38%. And presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says he will not run on the Libertarian Party ticket. The independent candidate tells ABC News he has met with Libertarian Party leaders many times and kept the door open, but now says his campaign doesn't need the party. In January, Kennedy told CNN he was still considering the partnership. He will instead continue to run as an independent.
And a New York campaign staffer for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been fired for misrepresentation last week. A video circulated of Rita Palma encouraging an audience to back Kennedy on the New York ballot because it would help former President Trump beat President Biden in November. Palma falsely identified herself as the New York State Director of Kennedy's campaign, according to a campaign spokesperson. After the campaign watched the video, Palma was fired. Palma released a statement after the firing. She said she said her time with Team Kennedy was one of the best political adventures of her life. She added that she holds no grudges and looks forward to the next 7 months of watching, quote, Bobby shine.
U.S. Senate candidate in Arizona, Carrie Lake, reportedly raised more than $4 million during the first 3 months of this year. But her Democratic opponent, Congressman Ruben Galeo, nearly doubled what she brought in during the same time period. His campaign says he raised $7.5 million. The winner in November will succeed Kyrsten Sinema, the one-time Democrat turned independent, decided not to run for re-election this year. Political observers are closely watching the race in Arizona. The outcome could determine which party holds the Senate seat next year. And the FBI is investigating the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore last month. The bridge collapsed after a support tower was struck by the container ship Dolly, causing the bridge to fall into the Patapsco River on March 26th.
A spokesperson for the FBI's Baltimore field office said the agency is present aboard the cargo ship Dolly, conducting court-authorized law enforcement activity.
The FBI is reportedly looking into whether or not the crew left the port while aware of the major issues with the vessel, according to the Washington Post.
The Biden administration will provide up to $6.4 billion in direct funding for Samsung Electronics. The money is to develop a computer chip manufacturing and research cluster in Texas.
The funding is part of a total investment that is expected to exceed $40 billion when private money is factored in. The government support comes from the CHIPS and Science Act, which aims to revive domestic production of advanced computer chips.
Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo says the proposed project will make Texas a state-of-the-art semiconductor destination. Raimondo said she expects the project will create at least 17,000 construction jobs and more than 4,500 manufacturing jobs.
The first factory is expected to be operational in 2026 and the second in 2027. And a government worker was found to have broken the law during the January 6th, 2021 events at the U.S. Capitol, but wasn't prosecuted. That's according to an internal report from the Treasury Department Office of Inspector General that was obtained by the Epoch Times. The report reveals that the employee was present on Capitol grounds during the breach. The worker denied witnessing violence or engaging in illegal activities, though video evidence contradicted these claims.
The employee, who was not named, breached barricades and stayed on the grounds for about 2 hours.
The investigation confirmed that the worker entered restricted areas without authorization. However, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia declined to prosecute the individual in May 2022.
The OIG told the Epoch Times the employee is no longer with the Treasury Department, but details about their departure remain undisclosed.
And changing track, two bodies were found in Oklahoma after the suspicious disappearance of two women. Officials say the bodies were found in the rural area of Texas County. It's the same location where 27-year-old Veronica Butler and 39-year-old Jillian Kelly disappeared. Four people have been arrested and charged with murder in connection with the disappearance. The two women went missing last month while traveling through rural Oklahoma to pick up children. It's still unclear what, if any, relationship the four suspects had with the missing women. The bodies will be transferred to the medical examiner as part of the investigation. Next, O.J. Simpson's estate executor says Simpson's body will be cremated. He also says Simpson's brain will not be donated for the scientific study of football-related head trauma. Simpson's estate executor, Malcolm Laverne, served as Simpson's longtime lawyer. The former football star died at the age of 76 last week after battling cancer.
Laverne said at least once someone was looking to study Simpson's brain for a disease called CTE. It's a degenerative brain disease associated with head injuries obtained by football players and boxers. CTE can cause mood disorders and changes in behavior, including explosions of anger.
Laverne says there's a possible celebration planned to honor Simpson's life. It's set to include only family and close friends.
A prison guard is accused of getting prohibited cell phones for inmates. The security supervisor in South Carolina allegedly accepted over $200,000 in bribes. Christine Mary Livingston was indicted on 15 charges, including supplying over 170 contraband cell phones. She has worked at the Broad River Correctional Institution for 16 years. She's accused of working with inmate Gerald Reeves to transfer bribes using Cash App. He's serving a 15-year sentence for fatally shooting a man in a convenience store. The two face up to 20 years in prison, a $250,000 fine, and an order to pay back the bribes if convicted. Contraband cell phones in South Carolina prisons are a longtime problem. In 2018, they helped spur a riot in one of the state's prisons. Since 2015, prison officials have discovered over 35,000 cell phones, more than double the number of inmates in the system.
And if you use Verizon, you'll want to know about this. Today is the last day eligible Verizon wireless users can sign up for money from a legal settlement. The funds are for customers who used Verizon services between January of 2016 and November of last year. They can get up to $100 by signing up online or through the mail. The lawsuit alleges Verizon deceptively charged fees, which the company denies. People who accept the payouts lose any right to sue Verizon over the issues in the future. And up ahead after the break, Georgian lawmakers come to blows in Parliament. More on a controversial bill that led to the violence.
A second stabbing in Sydney in just 3 days. This time, a bishop was attacked during a sermon. Details on the casualties.
The German chancellor kicks off his four-day China trip. CEOs of major brands join him as Germany tries to de-risk from China. More in just a moment here on NTD News Today. And now we have some short headlines from the UK, Germany, and other European countries. European stocks cautiously inched up today amid conflicts in the Middle East. Industrial and automobile sectors led as the supply chain has nearly recovered since the pandemic.
The defense industry was also among top gainers after Iran launched explosive drones and missiles at Israel over the weekend.
The EU is investigating whether China has subsidized green tech exports like EV batteries. Those subsidies could harm European producers. Russia says it considers Western sanctions on Russian metals illegal. A Kremlin spokesman said today the sanctions have already destabilized prices on global markets.
The Russian official told a briefing that such sanctions were a double-edged sword and could hurt those who introduced them. The United States Treasury on Wednesday imposed sanctions on two people and two companies.
Washington accused them of supporting disinformation efforts directed by the Russian government.
The move is part of increasing U.S. efforts to put pressure on Moscow amid its war in Ukraine.
Poland has received a transfer of $6.7 billion in European Union funds. The country's new pro-European coalition government has moved to resolve issues with Brussels over the rule of law. Those concerns earlier blocked access to billions in funding.
The European Commission announced in February that Warsaw could accept up to $145 billion after the new government began implementing judicial reforms. Poland is expected to submit its second and third applications for funds by the end of August.
The next round of funding could be as much as $10.6 billion.
Poland plans to spend the money on clean air initiatives, expanding broadband internet coverage, and roads and railways.
Voters in Croatia today prepared for Wednesday's parliamentary election. Polls indicate the conservative HDZ party will lose its majority after a series of graft scandals.
A Social Democrat-led coalition could change the small country's stance on major issues such as support for Ukraine. The main rival to the country's prime minister opposes aid for Ukraine, unlike the majority of EU member states.
The HDZ has dominated politics since Croatia's independence from a crumbling Yugoslavia in 1991.
The party has overseen its accession to the EU and the Eurozone and a tourism boom along its stunning Adriatic coast.
Georgian lawmakers came to blows in Parliament Monday due to a controversial bill. The bill is focused on so-called foreign agents.
The measure would require organizations that accept funds from abroad to register as foreign agents or face fines.
Footage shows the ruling Georgian Dream Party's leader being punched in the face by an opposition member of parliament.
The incident prompted a wider brawl between several lawmakers, an occasional occurrence in Georgia's often raucous parliament. Australian police on Monday said the attacker, who fatally stabbed six people at a busy shopping center in Sydney's beach suburb of Bondi, may have targeted women, as the country mourned the victims and hundreds of people laid flowers near the scene.
Australian police say the attacker, who fatally stabbed six people in Sydney, may have targeted women. The weekend attack took place at a busy shopping center in the beach suburb of Bondi. Hundreds have mourned the victims at the scene, including Prime Minister Anthony Albanese. Five of the six people killed and most of the 12 injured were women, according to New South Wales State Police Commissioner Karen Webb on Monday.
It's obvious to detectives that seems to be an area of interest that the offender had focused on women and avoided the men.
Witnesses have described how 40-year-old attacker Joel Couchy ran through the mall with a knife and was subsequently killed by Inspector Amy Scott, who confronted him solo while he was on the rampage. The only man who was killed by Couchy during the attack was a mall security guard. Police added Couchy had mental health issues in the past, and there was no indication that ideology was a motive. Violent crimes are rare in Australia. The country of 27 million has some of the world's toughest gun and knife laws.
A church in a suburb of Sydney, Australia, was the site of another stabbing today. It came just 2 days after the deadly attack at the shopping mall. And just a warning, some viewers may find the following footage disturbing. The church was live streaming when the assault occurred. The video shows a man lunging at a bishop before repeatedly stabbing him during a sermon.
A number of people were hurt, but there were no life-threatening injuries. The victims are receiving medical attention. Officers arrested a male and took him to an undisclosed location.
And next up, killed for selling state secrets to America. That's what a Chinese state media campaign seems to suggest. The video clip boasts China's success in combating foreign espionage. It zooms in on a spy called Huang Yu. He was executed in 2016 for selling state secrets. The clip made no mention of the foreign country, but it showed footage of CIA headquarters in the clip.
China said he handed over secrets, including military communications, to a foreign government. Media report he was executed a month after his conviction.
Zooming out, the CIA director last year said the agency has been working to rebuild its spy network in China. Beijing pledged countermeasures in response. Over a decade ago, China rolled up a lot of CIA operations, killing or arresting a dozen or more sources.
Last year, China also updated its anti-espionage law, banning the transfer of any information deemed to relate to national security, a move that unnerved some foreign businesses and investors. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz kicked off his China trip yesterday. He first visited Chongqing. It's a metropolis serving as a production base for China's auto industry.
His trip comes as Germany continues to rely on China. Berling said last year that it would de-risk, but China remains Germany's largest trading partner. German direct investment into China hit a record high, $12.9 billion, an over 4% increase from the previous year.
The country remains a key market for big German companies. Germany's top corporate brass also came with Scholz, including CEOs of Siemens, Mercedes-Benz, and semiconductor chemicals maker Merck KGaA.
Scholz is set to visit Chinese leader Xi Jinping in Beijing tomorrow. Advocacy groups are urging him to stress the importance of human rights during his visit.
And in France, a newspaper recently uncovered Chinese connections behind a large-scale smishing campaign in Paris, We have the details on what happened.
French newspaper Liberation reported in March that a Chinese arms dealer supplied IMSI catchers to a gang that conducted drive-by smishing scams in Paris. Smishing refers to sending fake text messages that prompt users to click on a link containing malware. The intention is to trick people into sharing personal data. IMSI catchers are eavesdropping devices that can track mobile phone traffic. They essentially function as fake mobile towers. French police uncovered the scam when they found a driver in a car behaving suspiciously back in December 2022. The car had been driving repeatedly in the suburbs of Paris while carrying IMSI catchers. The gang sent out smishing messages and collected phone numbers from hundreds of thousands of mobile devices nearby. The French newspaper reported that the man behind the IMSI catchers is a Chinese national called Kevin Yin. He allegedly travels around the world and sells high-end surveillance and spying equipment. French authorities identified Yin after discovering an almost $20,000 digital payment from the Paris gang and after cooperation with the U.S. law enforcement. Yin was later arrested in Geneva, Switzerland, while trying to board a flight. The French paper reported that Yin admitted to working for Chinese technology company Thinkwell and selling equipment to the Paris gang. The case has prompted privacy concerns in Europe and concerns over the Chinese regime's access to personal data. Reporting by Allison Lee, NTD News.
And in more China news, China reacting to Iran's drone and missile attack on Israel.
More details coming tonight on China in Focus with Tiffany Meyer at 9:30 p.m. Eastern.
And up ahead in golf, number one ranked Scottie Scheffler wins the Masters in dominant fashion, while a rusty Tiger Woods struggles. NTD's Dave Martin joins us to explain.
And cancer is rising in young people, but what's the cause? We sit down with a senior fellow from Stanford's Hoover Institution.
The 128th Boston Marathon is underway, and it looks like the weather is cooperating for over 30,000 runners. More when we come back.
And now for your sports news, we're joined by NTD's Dave Martin. Dave, Scottie Scheffler won the Masters yesterday in dominant fashion. Heading into the event, though, last week, was he mentioned as a favorite?
Yeah, actually, for sure. I mean, he was actually probably the overwhelming favorite to win this. I mean, he's ranked number one in the world right now. This is his second major title after winning the same event 2 years ago. And his eighth PGA win overall in just like a two-year period and third in like the last 5 weeks or something. He's really hot. Now, heading into the final round Sunday, he had just a one-stroke lead, but he pulled away on the back nine. He will claim the $3.5 million winner's prize. That's the most they've ever given out. Now, he may not have the same, of course, name recognition as a Tiger Woods, of course, but, you know, if he keeps playing like he did Sunday there, he'll definitely get there.
All right, now, Dave, speaking of Tiger Woods, a lot was made of him making the cut here. Where did he end up?
Well, he had a tough weekend. He ended up last 60th place out of the 60 who made the weekend cut, though. That was just a big thing for him to make the weekend cut. But he had his worst round ever at the Masters on Saturday. It was a 10 over par. That included back-to-back double bogeys, as well as four straight single bogeys in the back nine. He then followed that up with a better round four on Sunday, except for a triple bogey there on the fifth. It still ended up as his worst 72-hole score as a professional. Now, afterwards, he actually called it a good week. You know, I can sort of understand. I mean, this is the first time he was able to finish a major in like 2 years. He's had so many injuries. I mean, this was just his seventh overall event in the last 3 years since he had that car accident. Of course, to see one of the greats in the game really struggle like this, it's surprising for us, but you're going to be rusty if you don't play that much. Now, looking forward, he's planning to play once a month for the next few months, so maybe some of that rust wears out.
Let's switch gears to basketball, Dave. The NBA playoffs start this week, but first we have the two four-team play-in tournaments. How do these work exactly?
It's a very unusual four-team tournament between the 7 through 10 seeds in both conferences, like you said. Now, what they'll do is have the seven seed take on the 8 seed. The winner automatically advances to the playoffs to take on the 2 seed. But the loser isn't actually out yet. They also have the 9 seed play the 10 seed. The loser of that game is out, but the winner isn't actually in. They'll take on the loser of that 7 versus 8 game. So they give the higher seeds more opportunities to advance, plus they get home court advantage. The seeds, of course, are based on their win-loss records during the regular season. Now, this whole setup is really to include more teams into possibly getting into the playoffs so as to prevent against tanking. Now, tanking is like a fancy word for losing on purpose to get a higher draft pick, you know, in hopes of getting like the next LeBron James or something like that. I'm not sure it accomplishes that. It certainly makes for an entertaining, albeit somewhat confusing, first week of the playoffs.
Sure does. All right, thanks so much for joining us as always, Dave.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Dave. What's behind the increase in cancer among young people? A new study claims it's linked to accelerated aging, a concept related to stress that some doctors are skeptical of. For a closer look at the cause, I spoke with Dr. Scott Atlas, senior fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution and former advisor to the White House Coronavirus Task Force. Dr. Atlas, thank you so much for joining us. What do you make of the study claiming accelerated aging is the cause for the rise in cancer among young people?
Well, I think we know the data is that there's an increasing incidence of cancer in younger people. The cause is a lot more complicated. I think there's a lot of conjecture going on. The thing I want to get out about this is there's been a marked decrease in the use of medical care, particularly over the past 5 years. When you look at what happened during the lockdowns, there were two things that happened. Medical facilities were closed and people were falsely informed that they should be afraid of coming into medical facilities. And the data is quite striking for younger people, particularly given that they had very little risk from COVID. There's a significant drop in the use of preventive care, where things like 40-50% of decrease in use of preventive care of young people, of primary care appointments in outpatient facilities dropped to 50-70% of actual hospital admissions for young people with diseases. They weren't coming in for medical care. And when you stop using medical care, ultimately you pay the price, and that is, in this case, I think, increasing other diseases finally coming to fruition or, you know, being visible, like cancer. So the bottom line is this. We have an increase in cancer incidence in young people. We don't know the real cause, but we know this, that there's been an absence of medical care, an absence of medical attention to young people, and we've had increasing risk factors for cancer, including things like obesity, including things that are uncertain yet, like increased smoking and things like this.
And Dr. Atlas, I want to come back to the term accelerated aging. How do the scientists who use this term explain it? And is there any evidence we're getting older faster?
I think there's a stretching of what's happening and a conjecture about accelerated aging. These people that are invoking this are ascribing that from a variety of things, including increased stress, etc. I think we have to put the brakes on sort of long, far-reaching guesses as to what's happening and look at the most obvious things, which are those that I have articulated here.
Yeah, and everything you're saying seems to point to a broader issue you talk about often. Is there something fundamentally wrong with the scientific approach to health these days, and what explains that?
There is something that's been exposed by really the pandemic and the dissemination of information, the lack of the free exchange of ideas, the use of science in scientific journals and public health leaders to persuade people rather than talk about facts. Now, I think because of that factually happened during the pandemic and the lockdowns, the result of that is the loss of trust, and it's deserved. And I think this is a huge problem where, you know, more than half the population does not trust science itself, where the faith in CDC and FDA have dropped dramatically. And I think we need to fix that. I mean, we saw some data that over $300 million in shared royalties was given to NIH employees during the decade before COVID on drugs that they evaluated. I think we have a lot of substantial problems in our system right now that need to be fixed in order to restore trust and really credibility in what is important, which is good science.
Yeah, and if our scientific medical approach is off, I mean, how successful can we be in understanding real causes and solutions scientifically?
Well, we can't, and so that's why we need things like decentralizing the funding of scientific research. I think people don't understand how science is conducted. The NIH controls basically all academic science. And why do I say that? Because all academic scientists' jobs require an NIH grant. And so what happens, and I'm someone who's had multiple different grants, including from the NIH, and I've reviewed grants and been on editorial boards and editorships of journals, is that scientists will alter what they're doing in order to achieve an NIH grant. And there's a small cadre of people at the top of grant approvals, journal publication approvals, et cetera, that control what is funded. And so it's very difficult for people to do research that is not necessarily wanted by the NIH. And secondly, they're not going to speak out on how to reform the system because their entire careers are jeopardized if they do. The other point that I'd like to say is that there's more than 15 university medical centers in the United States that each receive over $500 million per year in funding from the NIH. So you have $500 million a year to these academic medical centers every year. They're not likely going to speak out against malfeasance, bias, poor science at the NIH because they don't want to jeopardize that funding. So we have a long ways to go. There are specific remedies to these situations. We need leaders who understand them and are willing to make the tough decisions on fixing things.
All right, Dr. Scott Atlas, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And the 128th Boston Marathon is underway. 30,000 athletes from 129 countries are competing in the long-distance race. The race, held annually on Patriots Day, is one of the more challenging of the world's six major marathons. But the weather appears to be cooperating. Highs of 63 degrees with clouds in the morning and sun in the afternoon. Four-time Super Bowl champion Rob Gronkowski is serving as Grand Marshal. This year marks 11 years since the deadly bombing at the marathon. Three people died and more than 260 were injured that day. Sissy Lema wins the men's pro race for his first Boston Marathon win.
And Helen Obiri of Kenya defended her title in the women's race. Obiri is the first woman to win back-to-back Boston Marathons since 2005.
And that's it for us today. For round-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app.
And be sure to stick around for NTD Newsroom at 3 p.m. Eastern with Stephanie Cox. We'll cover more stories from the U.S. and around the world.
See you then.